Are the twin brothers who are protected by their brothers doing well? Just as the eye is always protected by the eyelid, they are protected by the son of Pritha. This is Vidura speaking. Who snatched back their rightful kingdom from the hands of their enemy, Duryodhana, just as Garuda snatched nectar from the mouth of Indra, the thunderbolt carrier. Repeat after me. Are the twin brothers who are protected by their brothers doing well? Just as the eye is always protected by the eyelid. They are protected by the son of Pritha, who snatched back their rightful kingdom from the hands of their enemy, Duryodhana. Just as Garuda snatched nectar from the mouth of Indra, the thunderbolt carrier. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Indra, the king of heaven, carries a thunderbolt in his hand. It's very strong. Yet Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, was able to snatch the nectar from his mouth. Similarly, Duryodhana was so strong as the king, as much as the king of heaven, and still the sons of Pritha, the Pandavas, were able to snatch away the kingdom from Duryodhana. Both Garuda and the Parthas are pet devotees of the Lord, and thus it was possible for them to face such strong enemies. Vidura's inquiry was about the youngest brothers of the Pandavas, namely Nakula and Sahadev. These twin brothers were the son of Madri, the stepmother of other Pandavas. But although they were stepbrothers, because Kunti took charge of them after the departure of Madri with her husband, Maharaj Pandu, Nakula and Sahadev were as good as the other three Pandavas. Yudhisthira, Bhima, and Arjuna, these are the three. The five brothers are known in the world as regular brothers. The three elder Pandavas took care of the younger brothers, just as the eyelid takes care of the eye. Vidura was anxious to know whether, after winning back their own kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana, the younger brothers were still alive, happily under the care of the elder brothers. So we see how Vaishnavas are always concerned about the welfare of everyone. They are kuto bayo, they are doubtless, they are fearless. Samohama, Savabhutesu, they are distributing their mercy equally, kind to all. That is one of the qualities of a Vaishnava, is that always reminds others of Vishnu, always reminds others of Krishna, always has a way to think and see about the well-being of everyone, because they're not partisan. They do not see Krishna's mercy as limited. And they're constantly trying to snatch back any illusion, any maya, snatch away, just as we are honoring the appearance of Ramanuja, of Lord Ram, rather, sorry, the Ramachandra. And we see as we study the wonderful Ramayana, and as we study Bhagavatam, we constantly see demons trying to snatch, trying to claim. We understand the mature consciousness is claiming proprietorship of what really belongs to Krishna. The more maya there is, the more one is claiming proprietorship. Even to the point, not even want to believe that there is even a God existing. One can not only claim, but avoid any kind of accountability. One type of thief can steal something, and they steal, they know it belongs to somebody else. And they're watching, and they're afraid, and they're cautious that who really belongs to may find out. Or that some other aspect or authority may find out a about their deviation. But there are some people who can be so gross in their mentality. Not only are they constantly thieving, but they don't even consider that it's even something deviant, something wrong, that even has an owner. So the atheistic class of people, they can sometimes be so gross, they don't even want to accept that there is a supreme personality of Godhead. There's a supreme Purush. And this way, they can do their thievery without any kind of guilt. And it becomes harder for them to be reformed because so much of rehabilitation has to do with the individual seeing the need, acting upon the transition to carry out for rectification. But if entities think that they are God, or they do not accept the fact that they are trying to snatch away from Krishna, then it becomes harder, because without recognizing such, or like without recognizing the disease, it becomes very hard to deal with the cure. And this is why there is analysis and evaluation as we have some health problem, some mental problem. There's some analysis, some evaluation. So to have better clarity of what is needed for bringing about optimum health. Without proper analysis and evaluation and proper cognizance and recognition, then there's either speculation, and sometimes with the speculation, the patient even gets killed. Sometimes there's investigative surgery, find something, sometimes not, sometimes it just destroyed the person's system. Because once you start going and cutting, you create all kind of energy imbalances and things. So the body is never quite the same. So we don't have to so much do expiratorial surgery as Vaishnavas. Because we know what the basic diseases are. But we have to apply the application, we have to apply the medicine according to Desha Kalapata. We go to a doctor and he gives every, if he just speculates, we realize he's a quack. Gives everybody the same medicine on every circumstance, we realize he's a quack. It's not good. Some doctors do that. They, in general, have a few things they give to everyone. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So just speculating, doing anything in any way, that is crazy. That's lack of skills. Some people are in that mentality. Yatta mata tata pata, when it comes to religiosity. Little this, little that. Hodgepodge. But that is unfortunate. But it's also unfortunate, someone who's doing, giving the same medicine all the time, in the same way, to all the people. It's not a proper doctor. It's not a skilled doctor, really skilled person. They're not able to sufficiently evaluate specific situations. And even sometimes the same disease is there, but then they have to look at the metabolism. So there's a child, there's an adult, same disease, same treatment, but different dosage. It's just common sense. But people do not have so much sense these days. They're so much covered by sense gratification and the material energy, as well as even often in the spiritual communities. And material energy people are so covered because less and less are they accepting that there is a supreme proprietor. Less and less are they accepting that they have snatched away or trying to claim that which really is the Krishna. So much of the whole devotional process is dealing with snatching back. Major thing is first reclaiming our spiritual heritage. Our minds are constantly going all kinds of places. Savaya mana padada Krishna. We have to bringing the mind back constantly. Sankalpa, vikalpa, the mind is just always accepting, rejecting, rejecting, accepting. And so part of our devotional expertise becomes in how we have reclaimed the mind, which is intelligence and the senses, but mainly under the control of the mind. How we have reclaimed it. And it's not just going every place in all kinds of ways trying to connect with the sensual expressions and the material energy. And so as we advance more and more, the mind becomes more and more under control. And we're able to use the mind and intelligence more expertly in how to evaluate the Maya and accelerate the devotion. So our great acharyas, they constantly give us through their teachings and as much or more through their own examples. And this is why they're called acharya. Acharyavan Purusha Veda. So we understand acharya, then we know what is what. And as we don't, then we simply speculate. Or our intelligence gets snatched by the pool of the senses. So just as we see we're snatching back Sita from Ravana. You see we are, Lord Chaitanya snatched back Kala Krishna from the Bajaharis. Every great incarnation we see that appears that it has particular duties, and one of its duties is trying now to snatch back and reclaim the conditioned souls. Even though, like when Lord Chaitanya comes, that is just the external aspect, or that is the secondary. The primary, which is more confidential, is Krishna is engaged in his amazing disguise as he has come as Krishna and Radha combined, and now is acting as a bhakta. We were discussing the other day, in that disguise is his highest expression to the world. And is one of his highest expressions with his eternal bhaktas, because they want to come and be a part of that. Just as we have the Panchatantra. So each of them are also, they're there. And they are extending themselves based on the craziness of the people. But that's their compassion, that they come as a team, again and again, the Lord's incarnations and his great servants. And they come never denying the essence, but always directing the message according to the yuga. We see in Sattva Yuga, Treta, Kali, Dwapara Kali, that each time, same Krishna is appearing, but he's appearing differently. Not only is he appearing differently, but the Yuga Dharma for the age is also different due to the limitations of the living entities. In Sattva Yuga, people are meditating, living for hundreds of thousands of years, then there is a certain approach. This is natural. People have greater faculties, greater ability to accept the conclusion because most people are God conscious. When in Kali Yuga, people are so gross, they get grosser and grosser. Doesn't matter. Even the Muslim religionist. And so Krishna comes in a more interesting way by giving something that is even higher, because he comes as that expression of Srimati Radharani, but makes himself more available by his own interactions with the devotees, dancing with them, taking prasadam with them, emphasizing the saving, although as Lord Chaitanya has so magnanimously arranged for the saving of the Jagais and Marais. Or even such grossness like Jagai and Mani, they didn't even exist in Sattva Yuga. even in Treta Yuga to the same extent. So where there is more ignorance, or there is more sin, or there is more lust, there must be also greater spiritual weaponry. Where there is more snatching and strategy by the demons to reclaim, to claim that which belongs to Krishna, there must be a more accelerated effort on the part of the devotees to bring back to where it's necessary. There's nothing unusual. There's always this tug of war going on between the asuras and the suras. That is so much part of the whole existence of the material world, the dualities of the pious versus the impious. And we understand that there was a time when such great pious and impious entities did not even reside in the same planet, the same universes. And gradually, duality becomes more and more in competition, to the point that lower and higher nature is existing concomitantly within the mind of the same individuals. And we often see that. We see how our minds can become very, very demonic. Can question everything about Krishna sometimes. Everything about exists, our spiritual existence. Well, that happens because that is how the duality of material energy has become so dominant in Kali Yuga. But as we are more compassionate, less being captured by ahankara, the false ego, then the illusion does not cover us to such an extent. Why? Because our position is reclaiming. It's not that we are trying to become Krishna consciousness, as like its imposition is something unorthodox or unusual. But we're trying, we say many times, we're trying to become natural. So by trying to become natural, it means what we're trying to be free of. It's the uncovering process. So much of the efforts of the great acharyas is coming in, trying to uncover. And so by that effort, they always expose the maya and they accelerate the devotion. If they do not do that, they're not Krishna's agents. Krishna, as well as Krishna's agents, they are always doing the duality. They do not only just expose the maya, that is just harsh. Just to tell people and show people what is wrong, how fallen they are, what dangers that they are confronted with, and leave them at that, that is harsh. And just to only bring about the glorifications, that's sentimental. Just conceptual and theoretical. Because we are in prison. But we're not eternally damned. And at the same time, we have to access strategy how to get out, because it's possible. Sometimes even amongst our devotees, sometimes devotees only want to hear about the niceties. That is not Krishna consciousness. Compassion, somebody's in difficulty, you want to help them. So you help to evaluate the situation. It's like the doctor, you analyze the problem, symptoms from the symptoms, and you try to give some prescription medication based on that. You tell the person that it's not so bad, it's okay, just take some aspirin. And the person dies, can be sued for malpractice. Because the individual came to you, you evaluated, you knew the situation, but you did not act upon it. And if they came to you, if you didn't know it, you can also be sued. Because you have the license, and you're supposed to know what is to be done. Make some evaluation. So in any such situations, there's a taxes there. There's a responsibility on the patient when they come to have some evaluation of where to go, why to go. And there's a tax on the caretaker. Some accountability is there, karmically as well as socially. So here we see how, in spite of seemingly their limited or inferior position, seemingly, that by the Krishna factor, there's no problem in snatching back. That Prabhupada explains that Duryodhana, that even though he had such a powerful kingdom like that of Indra, still the Pandavas were able to reclaim. Just as Garuda snatched nectar from the mouth of Indra, although Garuda is just seemingly a bird, Indra is such a powerful entity. We see throughout Shastra in many cases where the adversarial situations, difficulties seem practically insurmountable. But the Krishna factor is there, then that is one of the beauties of the Krishna factor, is that it's super extraordinary. It helps us to do that beyond just the orthodoxy. It helps us to get additional blessings, mercy, empowerment. And so when the Krishna factor isn't sufficiently accelerated, we see the opposite. We see more and more failure, more and more legal suits, all this kind of things due to negative karma, acceleration of so many inauspicious things. So as we are trying to do various services, so much of it is based on now trying to claim to have proper proprietorship in a sufficient way. We have temples and we have projects. We go out, we distribute books, we do Harinam, we go out and preach in different environments. But it's all about, first, dealing with our own sickness. This is why we engage in sadhana bhakti, because we do all of these ninefold things, 64 different things. Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. We do all of this because of the fact that our mind and senses have been snatched away. So we try to center and focus ourselves by realizing that we are daso smi, we're servants to servants, dasu daso no das. And then as we're becoming a little sane, we then extend that and help others who are more insane so they can begin to also become. So we are simultaneously taking care of ourselves as we're trying to serve others. That's a little strange in material situations. But we understand that part of our own therapy, part of our own help, is we're also trying to help others. It's like we're mentioning how it's important that devotees preach. And what the Brahmins express, they should give classes as well, all of you. And preach as much as you can as you in different environments. It's not just only because you have some knowledge, and it's important for you to try to help somebody in that way. But by doing that, you're even more helping yourself, because then you are having to internalize and imbibe what you're saying, what the message is. You're having to take more to heart what is the process. And it gives you a certain kind of protection as you are reflecting on that which is the ultimate goal you're trying to achieve also. You're reminding others, you're reminding yourself. If you are not preaching, then the tendency is gradually you begin to forget who you are, what you are, why you are doing what you're doing. And because it means that you're not then being sufficiently compassionate, then why should compassion come to you? Because as we, karmically as we put out, then things come back in certain ways. But the preaching is not that we have to be in an arrogant mood where we are trying to beat people on the head. That's just our own maya, our own lack of purity. But our duty is to see the need for ourselves and for others, and to compassionately try to see how to distribute and get the message across as we are internalizing it more and more. The message for us is only on the surface. We have the tendency of just beating people. We see so much, religious fanaticism going on in that way. where people are just regurgitating stuff, just engage in the ritual, just engage in the form, in the external, so they fight each other, and even, you know, massacre each other, even genocide sometimes. So many of the conflicts that are even going on are based on ethnicity or based on religious fanaticism. People know something, they just beat each other, and they force and they impose their doctrines in a sectarian way. And everything is going on, but God has little to do with it, even though they consider it based on a theistic ground. So Krishna arranges, especially in Kali Yuga, when irreligion becomes religion, people become so ridiculous that he descends in such a way. An amazing thing is that even though he's descending in such a way, he is giving such a high message, but very tactfully, as he distributes the holy name, and particularly as he gives the most highest theology, our greatest expression in Krishna consciousness. Even though we are preaching to every town, every village. And this is the message that Lord Chaitanya has given us. But actually, our message is extremely confidential. Not that we have favorites as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Not that we are elitists, but it's extremely confidential. Although the Gaudiyas will say it is everywhere. Now let's think about this for a minute. What is the highest position that we understand in Vaishnava Bhakti? Let me ask you, what is it? What is the ultimate highest level of achievement, the ultimate highest goal, the ultimate highest service, the ultimate highest servitor? I made it easy now. Bali? Yes, but that's, how is that expressed? Huh? Madhurya Leela, but how is that expressed? Yes, but how is that expressed in its highest expression? Baladev? Yes. And even higher that express is Radharani herself. Do we realize that in nowhere in the Bhagavat is Radharani's name mentioned? She is our highest, she is the Ladini Shakti. According to Chaitanya Prabhu's followers, the Bhagavad speaks only of Sri Radha. In other words, we see the Gayatri Mantra, everything, everything explaining about ultimately Ladini Shakti. Although we find what? In the Sri Ramanuja, as well as the Brahma Madhva Musi Sampradaya, we do not see Sri Radharani anywhere in the Bhagavad. Neither does our own Sridhar Swami, who the tradition so reveres, ever mentions Radha in his original Bhagavad commentary. Although Sri Radharani is mentioned in some other Musi Puranas, for instance, her name is not uttered directly, even once in the Bhagavad. The Padma Purana mentions 18,000 gopis, among whom 108 are most important. Among those 108, 8 are considered more important. Among the 8, 2 have a special position, Chandavali and Radharani. Between the two, Padma Purana tells us Sri Krishna Sri Radha is the foremost. But in the Bhagavad, only Chandavali herself admits this, but she admits it also indirectly. The Now this is interesting because those in this Sri Sampradaya, like the Ramanujacharya followers, Madhava followers, they do not worship Srimati Radharani. And they also explain that just nowhere in the Bhagavad. But we build a whole case on Chandavali's expression. We build an entire case on Chandavali expressing that there is one who is most dear to Krishna. Now there are some reasons why this is such. Bhaktivinoda Kaur claims in his Bhagavata Acharya Marichina Mala, which is a commentary to have supposedly been spoken by Chandavali Gopi, who is, of course, Radharani's transcendental competitor, that Chandavali has spoken the verse, Anaya Radhiham Nuham. It is significant, for it says, in no certain terms, that no one but Sri Radha can fully satisfy Sri Krishna. So we build a whole case based on this that's in disguise. Although our greatest expression is Srimati Radharani herself. I'm bringing this up also according to our discussion we had the other day, of helping us to understand sometimes how we don't fully understand Krishna consciousness. That it's not a process of beating people on the head with outside of our society or with inside of our society. That it deals with tremendous internal understanding, tremendous compassion, where we do not deny the essence, but the essence must be given in its loving, devotional way to administer based on the disease. And that is expertise. That disease is there, and the idea is how to, in the most expedient way, eradicate that disease. So we do the evaluation, the analysis, we give the prescription, then we give the prescription according to the metabolism. That's why you see most medicines, certain percentage of it for a child, certain for an adult, so that it goes to the system and it's beneficial. It's not an underkill or an overkill, but it's beneficial. The same medicine that can help you, if you take too much of it, it can also kill you. Same medicine that can help you, if you don't take enough of it, you won't get the effects. And that is why we see that when Lord Chaitanya is coming in each age differently, and sending representatives differently, that it's the same medicine, but there's difference in application due to the necessity. See, the competition about the snatching back is always going on. We see there's even competition in the spiritual kingdom, but the difference is that there's no enmity, animosity. So we constantly remind ourselves the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual. We can evaluate so many things that's based on that. Now, mature people keep secrets because basically they have enemies and friends. And basically they have stuff to hide, which has little to do with their concern and compassion for others. It's mainly about their own stuff. Or Chaitanya's confidentiality is like in the nighttime kirtans and things. And some of the ways of his expressing certain things is all due to what will be best for the people. Not how to deny the people, how to cover up or not reveal something because of some materialistic sovereignty. So our position as Vaishnavas is we always want to declare boldly Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. We want to, with ourselves, with others, to be able to surrender to Krishna fully. And we do that by more and more understanding the internal message, living it, seeing how powerful it is, realizing how dangerous it is. We do not handle it properly because we become offensive. Realizing how much people need it, but how crazy that they in fact are at the same time. So interesting how, because even other Vaishnava Sampradayas do not even worship Radha because the fact that it is so confidential that unless there is proper guidance, one will not be able to see Radharani through the Bhagavad. One will not understand. Now here are some of the reasons. Again showing the potency when there's compassion, proper compassion, and a position of strategy in preaching. So there are several reasons given why Sukadev didn't mention Srimati Radharani. Because he is the one who was speaking. Is that he just didn't know? Is it that he just didn't care? Is it that he was just weak and afraid or deviant? That he wasn't on the front line because he didn't say Radharani's name? That's the highest expression we have. He did not offer that. So then how do we honor Bhagavatam? Sukadeva did not speak all throughout the scripture, giving Radharani's name. Do we see him as not proper preacher because of this? One, we see it is there if we have the adhikar to understand, even though it is not articulated. Two, it is mentioned that because in the assembly there were so many jnana karmas, karma khandas, there were so many other types of personalities, all kind of yogis and rishis of different calibers. So therefore, because of that, Sukadev did not mention. This is one explanation by the great acharyas. Again, showing his concern about other everyone, giving them what can be help, what could help them, setting them up. But those who are able to have the adhikar, even though certain things weren't said, they would still be able to catch on the message. It's also explained by other acharyas that due to the fact that he had only a short time, only 7 days to give the message to Maharaj Pariksit, that Radharani was actually his own Ista Musi Devata, his own worshipable personality, deity, etc., his main focus. And so if he had mentioned her name, he would have went into trance. He would have been inarticulate. He would have not been able to go on explaining and helping and facilitating. Because his highest expression would have been so much intimacy and dear to him that even though he was there in disguise, he would not have been able to keep his disguise going. His conscience would have went outside of the realms of his physical existence, which would have made him appear unconscious, but he had been in a deep state of trance. Prabhupada says sometimes when a great devotee faints, he actually visits the spiritual world. That he connects with his full essence. It's like when Madhavan Vindapuri saw the black cloud and he was thinking of Ghanasham and he went into the trance. So, again, due to the compassion that Sukadev had for his present student, Maharaj Pariksit, due to the compassion that he had for those who were in the assembly and trying to help them. Even though he was the best for speaking, he did not just arrogantly impose. He did not just give a message and just say, well, help everybody, they got it or they didn't. We do not see that in our Srila Prabhupada or other great teachers. But we also see that they did not deny, they did not water down because of the crazies of the people. But they found ways how to give it the medicine. So the medicine was there. And this is the greatest text that we are using, Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Bhagavatam. And even Bhagavad Gita. And in each case, we see the spiritual strategy. A Bhagavad Gita, how Arjuna was really an eternal associate. Krishna covered him over for a while to assist him. They both appear to help the world as well as the same time to arrange for this battle, Kurukshetra. In the Bhagavatam, the speaker himself, that he is very carefully addressing so many powerful issues, but in a way to benefit everyone. Otherwise, sometimes we see a new devotee, they're reading a little something, somebody, they're preaching to somebody, and they're telling them about Krishna, I get, you know, so many wives, about the gopis, and Krishna plays a flute, and Ananta says she has so many heads, and he's a snake. And the person runs out of the temple thinking, who are these people? They worship snakes, they worship, you know, a playboy. I mean, they just can't figure out what is this going on. And they become offensive. And out of our naivety, we have engendered or enhanced that offensiveness. Why do we notice Prabhupada again and again and again in his lectures as explaining, you are not the body? It's not that he didn't have anything else to say. It's not that he was just using it as transitional stuff to get to something else. It's that he wanted us to understand this properly so that other things can then be naturally appreciated. Becomes organic. Someone cannot understand the basis of unite the body. We start talking about spiritual world, life after death, higher planets, lower planets, devas, apsaras, gandharas. We talk about the different ages, yugas, so many things. It makes no sense. Because to them, it's all about this body, this time. It makes no sense. So even times people would ask some very philosophical question, and Prabhupada would bring them in to just some basics. Because without understanding that, the other things will have no meaning. And so Sukadev noticed his audience. The preacher must be sensitive to the audience. Seeing that in the audience, it was all these different types of personalities. Now, how merciful he was that he did not just exclude them. Or how merciful it was he did not just speak over their heads. Well, they could not be able to take to the message. But he gave it while giving Maharaj Pariksit the necessary, so that he could do what was necessary for going back to Godhead. So they try to give these different explanations. We can reflect on them all. One is that the Gaudiya's, that Radha is there. You just have to have the eyes to see. And Chandavali is giving us a clue. And as we look in other Puranas, we see there's more distinct mention. We see all of these scriptures as we build scriptures, and we have to put them together to see, you know, what is the message. And we also appreciate the significance that there was variegatedness in the audience. Because of that, the message was to reach, to penetrate, based on the audience. And three, we understand how qualified the speaker was. How much Radharani was so dear to him. As is Ishta Musi Devata. But at the same time, he held it within and was able to give so that he could still give, but without him having anything snatched away from him, wasn't that? He was the loser or becoming weak by not. But that he was giving in such a compassionate way. It's easier said than done, because material energy is basically in-group, out-group. It's basically hating of the Godhead. And when we have to somehow surrender to the idea that there's a God, we do it, you know, grudgingly. We try to do it either based on superficial religiosity or impersonalism, sometimes voidism. Or we do it as Vaishnavas, you know, based on mixed devotion. We still do what we want to do, and we want to call it, you know, Krishna conscious. So it becomes hard for such people to really become genuinely mature Vaishnavas. And we see that year after year, to the degree that people do harsh things toward each other. At the same time, they're supposed to be carriers of the bhakti. It means so much of the bhakti is all still just from the mind, the intellect, from the external, from the ritual, not from the heart. Because from the heart, certain things you just don't do. Certain things in your heart, integral part of you, just don't do. It's not a part of your makeup. Certain kind of offensive things, certain kind of rude things, certain kind of harsh things,
certain kind of even sinful things, you just don't do them. If your internal makeup and what has come out, what has developed, is of a different caliber. So certain kind of external activities, they also give a reflection on the internal maturity, the internal maturation. Take it the opposite way. Internal maturation is strong, then you see certain things that the person automatically, naturally does, or is ready to accommodate, etc. So we see so many Vaishnavas doing so many things that's non-Vaishnava. We see so many Vaishnavas doing so many things that are not even pious in the way they interact and treat each other. We realize that yes, things are going on, but so much internal imbibing isn't sufficiently happening. And because of that, then Maya still grabs the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. They can be a problem. So we want to reflect on these things as Vidura is asking such questions. Asking questions, trying to get a sense of clarity on what is the situation. Once you realize that there's always the snatching and competition, even in the spiritual world, because that is the real sense, but it's all about service of Krishna. So I conclude with, like in the spiritual kingdom, well, there's three different types of gopis. There is those who favor Srimata Srimati Radharani, who are basically under the guidance of Srimati Lalita. So they are normally in Radharani's camp, favoring her. You can see why sometimes there's alignments and things in the material world, but just in a perverted sense. So it's not that these things stop, it's a matter of consciousness. Competition, alignment, snatching, you know, mostly posturing. It's a matter of who it's for. It's like in the material world, there's sex life, there's union, there's association, there's relationship. So it's not from, doesn't come from nowhere. So there's also some bandha in the spiritual kingdom. Different nature, but these things are perverted reflections of something that's higher that's actually there. There's a counterfeit thing because there's a real thing in that sense. There is powerful medicine that works, and there's quackery, you know, etc. So there are those who are in Lalita's camp who favor Radharani all the time. And there are those who are in opposition in Chandavali's camp, who for the enhancing the transcendental mellow, there is this competition. It's like sometimes we have competition in temples and book distribution, we have competition and devotees doing services and whatnot. And it creates often a great sweetness. If we take it off ourselves, per se, then it can get gross also. And it can even become materialistic. It even can sabotage each other or deny or not appreciate. But when it is spiritually surcharged, there is this excitement and exhilaration to achieve. And someone else is excited and trying to achieve even more for the service of Krishna. And that creates more and more potency, more and more focus in such ways when the nucleus is proper. So this competition between Chandravali and Radharani is so sweet in that way. But then there's also those who are basically under the care of Vishakha. And they are sometimes favoring Radha, sometimes favoring Krishna. So you have these alignments under a certain type of guidance, but with no enmity, no animosity. So we look at the material world and we have all these fragmentations within our own existence. The mind want to do this, the intelligence does, the senses doing this. And then we have amongst individuals all these different intriguing, crazy things. As we've been discussing how with these children shooting other children in the schools, and with all of these accelerated, I was talking to one of the devotees in England, they were telling me there how all of these hate crimes are going on like anything, bombings are going on in different neighborhoods. And so this kind of mentality is increasing all on the planet now. What is all these alignments, in-group, out-group, and Maya trying to find more ways to snatch the mind of the citizens. for getting people to think that your success or existence is based on the annihilation of someone else, another group. It's been so much in the last couple of weeks still dealing with some of our devotees in Yugoslavia who are now under the difficulties of the war. Because there's a lot of other effects that's happening with the bombing that's going on by NATO. Then some places, tens of thousands of people who are cut off from other parts of the country. There's some places where tens of thousands of people have no water. There's no way to get them water because there's no transportation available. The bombing has affected the water systems. You know, no electricity. So many things. So I got one communication yesterday in my backup email, a couple hundred pages. And one of them was emphasizing that as people in some of the countries look for temples and pursue projects, should also be a little sensitive to what's in the neighborhood. Because if the bombing is taking place, they're bombing bridges, they're bombing where there's oil, petrol, they're bombing, you know, telecommunications. So a few devotees are sending out messages that we need to also be a little careful in the future. That's about where we buy properties. Because if there's conflicts, there's wars, there's things like this, some of these places, people who live near the areas, then they'll be more susceptible to various types of disturbances. Water supply getting contaminated, or people, you know, losing their lives. So there may be bombing. When war starts off, when it gets more intense, of course, they don't care about civilian bombing. They directly bomb civilians sometimes. But in most cases, by international war standards, you're not just supposed to bomb like that. But then, there's some fallout from casualties. You're trying to bomb some sensitive places. You know, what do? People just bomb. So again, Yidanagri and places like this have a great sense of value on that side because, you know, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere in one sense. That we're not near, you know, some of these, you know, these kind of facilities that, you know, are dangerous and also in many cases they emanate so much unhealthy things for the environment also. You see more and more reasons for Prabhupada's strategy. Simple living and high thinking, you know, is so important. Real life, you know, is so important in that sense. As I mentioned before, we were trying to see how to get some of the devotees out. Because we have devotees, you know, who are serfs. We have devotees who, and it's interesting because we see that as Vaishnavas, we don't align with any of these things. Although, you know, NATO is Americans and it's, you know, it's the whole coalition of English and French and whatnot. But so many things they're doing is crazy. So many things that's going on the other side is crazy. And in the process, just thousands of people are just dying like anything. As this snatching is going on. I'm going to get into a long, you know, detail about this. But it's snatching. So I was sending communications about how to get some of the devotees out. But then we're finding that some were able to get to the Hungary, some were able to go to Germany. But most, of course, the men, they can't leave. When the men from 18 to 60, they try to leave, they put them in prison, or they kill them. Because the idea is that they must be available for the war. So this is a grosser extent, but all this has to do with a similar kind of mentality of people not understanding who's the real proprietor, not developing sufficient spiritual connection or spiritual understanding. And therefore, these problems of ethnicity, problems of religious fanaticism, and problems of impotency. So we want to, as Vidur was asking, about the status of things. We want to constantly look at what is the status of things and see, oh, is this really working? If it's not working, how to make it more potent? Or how to adjust so that things do work in such ways? So we'll stop there. Any questions or comments that anyone has? Interesting how we think about that, huh? We are so accessible as Vaishnavas in our theology, but at the same time, it is very deep and very confidential. Even our foremost presentation of Bhagavatam, it is so careful and that it is not even mentioning Srimati Radharani directly. And interesting because as Gaudiyas, we are even more for Radha, even more than Krishna. We more or less accept Krishna, and we want to be Krishna's slave because only because of Radharani's desire. And so it is very deep. And many people parrot the philosophy. Most people, they parrot it. They don't understand it. Because they understood it, their lifestyle would be different. This is the first thing. They really understood it, their life would be different. There's certain things you don't do if you become of a certain level of consciousness. You just don't do it. Just like now, for practically all of us, there's no question that we're going to go into McDonald's and get some, you know, abominable stuff. There's no question. I mean, it's just not a part of our consciousness. Not a part of our lifestyle. Somebody does that, we realize there's something about their consciousness that even lets them take that, you know, as an alternative. They say, well, I was hungry. And they look at you, what do you expect me to do? Do you have hunger pains? The closest store was like, you know, 15 minutes away. So I just popped in to McDonald's. And I'm full now, and I can do my service. People look at them and say, crazy. They say, the practical thing is that I went there, and now I have more time to do my service now. I didn't have to cook. You're thinking, this is crazy. It's just out of a conscious of a devotee. So there are certain things that if we do, it's a sign that it's a barometer about our particular consciousness. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you for a nice class, and welcome back to Gitanagari, I meant to say. On that note, I was saying, I know I want to make it, you know, be a better person, but somehow, mentality forced you to do one thing when you don't really, when it's not a good idea, but, you know, how, the consciousness, you know, certain situations arise, and then the consciousness throws the intelligence out the window, you know, because one's consciousness is not at where it's supposed to be at.
So that is common, because we are products of environment, heredity, past life, influences. So we don't come into the world with a clean slate. But we come with so many reactions unfolding based on some previous activities. And as we are doing things even in this life, certain things are coming in our directions based on also on karma. In some cases we come in with, you know, more baggage, and it makes it more difficult to, you know, to accelerate. But the prescription, the medicine is there, and it still can give us sufficient help. We just have to be more desperate. We have to have more spiritual greed. And even that's hard without association that, you know, that stimulates that. It's very hard to just try to be Krishna conscious, without association that kind of protects, guides, pushes us somewhere. Yes.
Gurudev, you were saying about preaching, and like Srila Prabhupada said, preaching is the essence. In what mood shouldn't we always be in the mood that we are trying to elevate someone or trying to help someone, rather than trying to show our advancement or what thing?
Yeah, we should be even more in the mood that we have fallen, and so much for our own survival as well, existence, and so much for our own debt. The Prabhupada has given us so much. We can never repay him, but we can make some humble attempts by trying to share. It's actually dangerous when the speaker is really thinking, I know the stuff, and I'm going to get you straight. It's actually dangerous. Sometimes our, you know, especially our younger devotees, sometimes older also, they have that kind of idea. I know the stuff, and I'm going to go out and get somebody straight. You see? And that's dangerous because that doesn't accelerate sufficient compassion, even though it may cause one to be enthused. I'm going to go out and stand behind the people I can give something to. But it's more in the mood. I'm going to go out and show how many people that I'm a special person. And I'm so special, I'm going to tolerate their nonsense, and I'm going to help them to, you know, become something because I'm so great. And so that, you know, something happens, but it's not, you know, it's not profound. But the idea should always be, and again, we have to look back at the examples in the scripture. Krishnadas Kaviraj is writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's such an exalted soul, and he's writing about such exalted topics. But his mentality is that he's begging for the mercy, permission to do, and he's doing it in the mood of also self-purification. We see that in the writings of Bhaktivinoda and so many others also.
I was appreciating my uplifting. I was in the parking lot, and the guy was pushing the cars, and he was saying, man, things are really rough. And he said, I had $10 on my number the other day. If it came out, I'm out of here. And then I got in a little conversation with him, and through the conversation, I was able to throw in a little transcendental, you know, realization. Or we got talking about
share something uplifting for his consciousness.
Yeah, it was blissful just for it to, you know, some of it to register. You know, mm-hmm. Sort of emphasize, we are in this material life for a short time, and
yes.
Sort of along that line, and was sort of taken to it a little bit. And then to top it off, I was in the van, and I reached and grabbed some prasada, pack of cookies, and gave that to him. So that was a blissful feeling.
Yeah, there's a powerful exchange that happens when we appreciate what Prabhupada has given us, and then we try to share it. And we look for opportunities, you know, to see, because sometimes we can be extremely direct. Sometimes the best we can do, which is not bad, we give them prasadam, or we help to direct their consciousness. And seeds, you know, seeds are planted. In any exchange, though, we should always remember, though, we're selling the message, and we're also selling ourselves. Because when people take a message, they also are always reflecting somewhat on the carrier, which helps them to feel whether or not they really, you know, to really accept it or not. And there's just a powerful thing that happens when you really care for people. It's a powerful thing that happens, you know, in the exchange. The other day, I'm, you know, working on my health, and I'm seeing, you know, different doctors, and allopathic and holistic. And I was telling one of my disciples, whose doctor said, you know, this doctor I went to see, he's a nonsense. I mean, the guy was just so impersonal. I just couldn't believe it. And I was thinking, how sad it is, the people he has to treat every day, that he's just like so insensitive and so impersonal. And I felt sad for him because, you know, he's an older man. He's probably you know, saw, you know, tens of thousands of people, you know. And it's just a job for him. But it was obvious to me, this guy doesn't care, you know, doesn't know who I am, doesn't care who I am as a patient. I mean, it's just a number, just a chart. It's just money. And, you know, whatever he said, whatever he did, it had a different effect than when you have an understanding that somebody actually cares for you. Then the message they give you, the instructions they give you, whatever, it takes on a whole different level. And a lot of the times it has to do, of course, just with attitude, because it's what people are internally carrying. So there are times when we can just have a little kindness to someone, and that can stimulate them, you know, spiritually, to inquire, or it can help them in their spiritual progress. They didn't make an offense towards you. You assisted them in some way. And, you know, it's all about sukriti and jnana sukriti. But it has to be a lot to do with communication.
Psychological.
I'm getting in the habit of calling me Guru Dave or Bhattacharya Swami. A new resolution now, these thoughts in the background have to be given up.
Thanks for reminding me. Okay. There's a psychological understanding kind of in vogue now that says when someone has many different issues, that they are in process. They're in process trying to work on their many issues. So also a devotee, we know that we have very large false ego. And sometimes we think that, well, we're also in process working with our false ego. So how can we come out of our comfort zone working in that process?
Well, it's simple. Somebody says, well, you know, don't mind me, I'm falling. Of course we're falling. But we have to work on that. We have to recognize that and do something. It says, well, you know, I mean, I haven't chanted my rounds in 5 days. You know, I'm falling, so don't mind me. Or I can't do any service, you know, today and tomorrow because my mind is just too far gone. Well, just reflecting on that, accepting that, that's not going to make a difference. Well, we make a difference by doing the different thing. Not just creating a mantra and playing into the same stuff, because then when will we ever change? We'll keep saying, well, I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
All right, Bhavasoma Krishna Pad. I just want to apologize for coming late this morning. I had to water the plants in the greenhouse. Also, I wanted to share a realization I was having yesterday, just based on the class you were giving the other day at the Institute, that you were saying that we shouldn't do our service in a begrudging mood.
Yeah.
And I kind of was approaching yesterday my service in that mood. I was kind of feeling overwhelmed, and a baby was crying, and I was trying to figure out how to do two things at once, and I was having a hard time trying to figure out how to hook up some hoses in the garden. And then Krishna sent a devotee to help with the baby, and then I kind of, you know, just still kind of was in a begrudging mood, but then I figured it out. And once I kind of shifted my consciousness that this service is actually, you know, to please the deities, and that even if I get one plant out of, you know, all that has been planted to offer them, how nice it would be. And, you know, when I kind of shifted my focus on the deities, you know, trying to offer something nice to the deities, I actually got energized, and I, you know, wasn't feeling so overwhelmed, you know, physically and mentally. And so I was just, you know, appreciating how, you know, just trying to use, you know, the techniques that you give us is so helpful.
Yeah, it's a good example is that sometimes we can't do as much as we would like to do, or we're having some difficulty. But if we just try to do it with quality and realize that we want to offer, what we're doing is for the service of, you know, Radha Damodar. Then something that is excruciating or difficult, it just takes on a whole different face. puts us in a whole different space. Because there are times when certain things just don't happen so easily. And if we're thinking too much just about the thing only and the complexities, we can lose enthusiasm, become very depressed. And then we won't be able to do something that we can do with effectiveness. And then many times it's just good to have plan A, plan B, and plan C. That the specific thing doesn't work out, you don't waste time, you have some other thing you can begin to focus on also. Any last questions? Right up. One second. Connors, you have a question? Well, you have it. You can have it. Say your question and give it to Rada next.
I don't know if this is maybe the opposite of what Mother Rajalila was saying, but what if you know that you have a particular problem and you're trying to work on it, but it just seems like it's taking a long time and you're still having the same problem?
We keep having the same problem coming up again and again. Then it's a sign that our determination is weak. So we have to strengthen our understanding a little bit more about the issue, and also understanding of what we're trying to reach. Krishna is not unfair, so he doesn't keep just forcing the same problem on us, you know, for no reason at all. Somehow we keep drawing the same kind of problem within our life, and it happens this way sometimes. You see particular type of pattern happening in the devotee's life, then we have to move out of some present paradigm so that we don't keep getting subjected to the same type of problem. A certain sign of our stagnation, that same kind of thing is happening. As long as we're in the material world, there'll be, you know, so many things taking place. We shouldn't have the same type of issue that keeps coming. Same type of issue keeps coming. We have to look closer, really closer at ourselves to see why we keep latching on. While we're thinking and saying that we don't want this, but there's some deep part of us that keeps going for it. And that's why it happens. Because Krishna is ultimately arranging according to the aggregate of our desires. So we have to see how to position ourselves so that our desires shifts and become stronger. Radha.
Gurudev, I was remembering when I was in Detroit, and I was a tour guide for the temple, and that was like the cultural center, and it wasn't always looked at so much as being devotional service, and I tried to look at it that way, and when I would do the tours, I would try to have the group really feel comfortable and, you know, to appreciate the houses. And it was actually quite boring talking about the tile and the wallpaper and this and that. But by the time we would get to the very end of the tour, the last room we went into was Srila Prabhupada's room. And by then, the group would basically understand that if it wasn't for him, this building wouldn't exist. So they would come in, and that Murti, Prabhupada's Murti, I mean, he was present in the room. And a lot of times when we had senior citizens, and they'd be like, oh, you know, oh, he's here. And someone explained to me that even though these people came in and they really didn't really understand that much about Krishna and about Bhagavad Gita or the basic things of our philosophy, just if in that moment when they came in the room and they saw Prabhupada and they felt his presence, because a lot of time, you know, they'd say, oh, very holy, that for them, then they might have a shot in their next birth at something, you know, very potent. And that was just something that I tried to do as a service, but it was actually very hard.
It was very hard. See, the problem with the cultural center is not so much the technique, because there are people who would never even come to a temple who would come to a cultural center, and then they wind up seeing Prabhupada. And some people, of course, would, you know, take something from the restaurant, or in some cases, it was, you would see the deity. But the problem was the lack of Krishna consciousness of devotees in general who were involved in the cultural center. It's one of the dynamics that we have in Detroit of the temple versus the cultural center, etc. It's not really that type of preaching. There's something wrong with it, because Prabhupada particularly wanted that project to represent, and it represents much of Prabhupada's mood, the best of the East and the best of the West. So you have this materially opulent place, very grand, it's connected with, you know, tremendous material heritage, and at the same time, it's the temple, it's the deities. But the problem has been the devotees, who have been mainly involved in the cultural center, and that they are not able to have sufficient internal, and I'm not singling anybody out, but if they don't have sufficient spiritual practice, sadhana, devotion, etc. So therefore, when they do something like this type of preaching, then it doesn't produce a certain potency, or some of the effects is not as much as it could be, because what you give is what you give. When you are guiding people, or teaching people, or showing people, you're also giving yourself. Sometimes there was this debate that maybe this is Maya. They have this thing, and you get these tours coming, and you know, why not just only do, you know, basic Krishna consciousness? Because after all, what is the use of this? But no, in warfare, as I mentioned many times, it takes many different types of weapons. And so in some cases, one type of thing is more effective for some people, other types are not. And so there are people who, for instance, there are some people, like now the BBT, has become more successful in getting Prabhupada's books in some of the, you know, in some of the bookstores. So there are some people who would not buy a book on the street, but because the book is in the bookstore, there are people who actually buy. Or there are some people who would be more prone, you know, to buy it on the streets, because they met somebody, talked to the person, and they take it more serious that some person, particularly, specifically, you know, gave it to that individual. Some individuals who would not come to a Food for Life or would not even come to a Sunday feast, but if you have a restaurant and you charge them $5, they'll come and they'll eat the very same meal. You know, it's interesting. And so it's not that one is good and one is bad. It's a matter of, you know, trying to reach the people and then evaluating the effects also. There is a certain security in living in the temple, wearing the dhoti, wearing the sari, tilak on, shaved head, whatever. There's a certain security in that that often when people get outside of that, they have trouble. But then it's also a sign of their own immaturity. If once they leave the temple and they can't maintain their consciousness, you know, for more than, you know, a few days, then there's a question how much they really, you know, they really imbibe the devotion. I mean, there's no question about it. It's, you know, Prabhupada's already said it, how, you know, the demons, they attack the devotees. So as things, and hopefully that never happened in our era, but as things do get more funky and mature energy, excuse the expression, devotees will be attacked. I mean, already you can see that there's some cases where people, they're so sinful, they just see you in devotional garb and they get angry. So, I mean, we do have to understand that our existence does stir up things, because the piety and the devotion, it impinges on, you know, sinful people's consciousness. And there's now more and more people, I mean, there's so many different sections now and places where people engage in satanic stuff, they engage in lower energy things. And these people, they see, you know, spiritualists as enemy. It's like now, you know, they're attacking homosexuals, they're attacking minorities, they're attacking age. When they were calling me yesterday from England, tell me that they're putting bombs in the Indian community, putting bombs in the Caribbean community. So, you know, most of these are, you know, people following, you know, Nazi mentality. They're engaged in, you know, satanic and different types of practices. So, you know, little Aranyakasipus, they're getting empowered by sinful nature. It's beginning to become more dominant on the planet. As they study now, more things are coming out every day about these kids, you know, who shot the children. And they're finding out that they're listening to the music of this guy with Marilyn Mason or something. A big demon, you know. He's an entertainer, doing all these sinful things. And they're reading, you know, these, you know, neo-Nazi things. They do the thing on Hitler's birthday. So this is all the snatching of the asuras, in essence. So there will, even now, there are some places where it's getting to be a little dangerous if you're in Vaishnava garb. And we realize the whole material world is dangerous, so, you know, what can we do? But there'll be times when we have to be careful in certain types of environments. But there's less and less problem in general as we make our theology work. As we create viable communities, then many people will just think about us in a favorable sense. They'll see us as different. They'll see us as favorable. But where we just go on and on year after year, we have most of our people, you know, like some places on welfare, and we have, you know, so much, you know, divorce. We have so many dissatisfied children, or children who are still in the movement, or children who are dysfunctional. Then some people who are not demons per se, but are just so-called mundane materialists, they'll become angry at us. And they'll see us as disturbances to society. And these groups, while we ask some of you to go and visit this cult awareness thing that was happening in Port Royal, want you to get some understanding also of how there's campaigning going on. There are people who go out to universities and they go to schools on a regular basis. It's their whole job. And they just go around talking about cults. Some of the stuff they reveal is pretty intense because a lot of stuff is happening. But somehow they lump us into all of that. Some people hear about this and they see this. And then they see people who they see are cult people. They become angry. And some of them will do, you know, crazy things. This is why the media now is so dangerous in TV. You know, showing some of these, you know, these movies where, you know, people, you know, in so much macho conscience where they're just shooting, killing, going into places, killing. There's so many video games, it's like that. That is definitely affecting children's minds. They get these video games and they're just shooting everything, everybody. So they're developing, you know, weak-minded people especially. It'll be interesting as this expose happens more and more when this own case is happening, this case is happening now. But how is it that these two boys able to make 30 bombs and place them in different places? How is it that their parents didn't know about this? You know, it's definitely more than two people involved. There's something that's more intense about such a thing. How can parents that see their children doing something in the garage day after day and not, you know, wonder? How can they be so insensitive to the kids? The kids got weapons in their rooms and they don't have any, you know, knowledge of it. How can they be on the computer like this day after day after day, year after year, into these things? If their plans has come out so far is that they had planned to kill over 500 people. They had very systematically had organized this in such, you know, demonic way. Mm-hmm. Let's see. They're definitely going to find that it's more than two kids. For two kids carrying those heavy weapons and carrying all the bombs, impossible. Impossible. Humanly impossible. There had to be more strategizing going on. Other people, or some things they place, you know, many days ahead of time. You just can't carry, you know, all these heavy weapons and then carry so many bombs like this in this way. It's impossible. You put them all into me. It's some other strategies going on. But we definitely understand that some of these entertainers with this mentality that, you know, they're demons. And that the media and the sound vibration of these things, it has an effect. But what we're missing is that as more and more people are being exposed, then tomorrow there's somebody else who's going to do something similar. This kind of violence breeds violence because a lot of these instances, they study other things that happen of this nature. And then it makes it more prone to something else is going to happen in the near future. And this was not, you know, an inner city. It was not, you know,
It was a respectable neighborhood, a very respectable school. And so what the Americans are realizing is that this can happen any place and at any time, and that there's no institutions, you know, that are safe. So you're going to see, you know, thousands of people, you know, homeschooling now, a lot more. You know, people looking for alternatives. I remember when we were in one of our projects a couple of years ago in Washington. We lived at the Institute on Ingraham Street. And I used to see, we were not so far from an elementary school, and I would notice how majority of parents, you know, would walk their kids to the schools. They're just so afraid of what happens in the schools, going to the schools, coming after the schools. It's very unfortunate when people are living in so much fear. So this is why natural life is also important, because fear brings negative reactions. When you're too fearful, you shut down your higher faculties, and also you attack because you think that somebody's going to attack you. To have to bring up children now in these kind of environments is very hellish.